Messi wasn't stepping like that back in the day. Like, was he even,
no, no sure. offense, it was at the end of the career, it was hookers and sevens were told, right, you have to stay on the wing channels. I'm going, oh no, please, don't keep me in the middle.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Welcome back to House of Rugby URC, brought to you with the support of our good friends at Bank of Ireland.
We've got another packed show for you this week, guys, as we look back on round five of the United Rugby Championship. We'll also be taking a close look at Andy Farrell's Autumn Nation Series squad ahead of their upcoming fixtures against Japan, New Zealand and Argentina.
For today's show, we're delighted to welcome former Ulster and Irish international Chris Henry. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great to have you on, Chris. We're going to ask you 10 questions at the end of the show, but first, let's take a look at the weekend's action.
Right, guys, let's start off first with a good weekend. Leinster on Friday night had a massive win against Glasgow, another bonus point win. We got a try coming up here from Hugo Keenan.
Glasgow trying to repel it, but they're coming in waves. Opportunity perhaps here for Lowe. He gets the ball on, and Hugo Keenan will get the second score of the night for Leinster.
Excellent team try here. Look out for a really good offload from James Lowe in the build-up. What do you make of Leinster, guys?
They're just so dominant, man. It doesn't matter who's wearing the Leinster jersey. Just, every single player is incredible, and I just can't see them being beaten at all this year. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I completely agree. Every time you talk about Leinster, it's the collisions they win, it's the physicality, but it's their decision-making under pressure. I think it's just that it puts them at a different level. They make smart decisions, and as you mentioned, like all the combinations, no matter what age they are, they're chucked in and they do well and smash it. So it was a cracking game of rugby to watch. Yeah.
Such a high-tempo match, like the speed of the ball, and like especially from the ruck as well. They just, both teams just wanted to play and keep the momentum going. It was just always going. I don't think I actually got a break until the 33 minute into the match. They had a water break then, and you could just see they were all gasping for it because it was just so fast paced.
What do you think of this tempty try here, lads, on 38 minutes? The try just before half time, they got it back into it.
I mean, it was a cheeky little try, wasn't it?
It looks like he's still bound to that ruck. Like, that probably shouldn't have been a try, should it?
Yeah, I think the ref is on the far side of the ruck, so he mightn't have had a proper look, but he got away with it, so.
And sure, rules change every blooming week at the moment, so who knows what it is this week.
So you get away with a few in your day, did you?
You take those when you get them. But no, I think at the moment it is that he's part of the ruck, so it shouldn't have been allowed. But I think, look, the scoreline in general, I think really flattered Glasgow as well. Like, that's the scary thing, that Leinster, they shouldn't. Glasgow, I think, scored twice whenever Leinster had their yellow cards. And, it could have been more for Leinster. And it's away from home in Glasgow. A really strong Glasgow team as well. So, it's scary to think of that's how good they are at the moment. Yeah. And if they can keep that consistency.
Yeah.
So, Greg, it's which team is going to beat them?
You know? I can't see them being beaten. And then their attitude as well. You see this turnover there by Reese Ruddock, and they're all running in and cheering and delighted. And they're like 20 points up. So.
Yeah, 7 minutes to go, like, and they're going crazy because of a turnover. Like, this, it's just going to show like they're really big under D this year. Like, and it's something they're trying to improve on and something that they're looking at. This.
Yeah.
We're bringing them into Europe and bring them beyond. Do you know, but like they do, they look absolutely unbeatable. But
they do, of course. And another good win the weekend for Scarlets. Well, not another one. They actually their first win now in 3 weeks after getting beaten by Munster, and they got beaten by Leinster as well.
Well beaten.
Yeah, last week. And then they came out and they got their much needed win against Benetton. 34-28, I think it was.
Yeah.
34-28, yeah.
Yeah, so good to see Scarlets getting a win. A good performance there.
Yeah, Scott Williams actually in particular was brilliant. He was superb. It's a shame that he's been left out of the Welsh squad. He was discarded from them. So what do you think of him as a player?
Yeah, he's been unlucky. Like, he's been really good for the last couple of years. I know he's had a lot of injuries, but he's a serious player when he gets going.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, the depth of the Welsh team in the centres as well, it just shows you. But I always never enjoy playing against him. He's a tidy player, you know.
Yeah. We get on to the big game of the weekend anyway, lads. I mean, I think everyone here, we can't stop talking about Connacht versus Ulster. I mean, I don't think you're too impressed with the defeat. Like, I mean, coming out four bonus point wins, but you can't take away from Connacht. They were incredible.
No, and I think, like, from a Connacht perspective, it sounds like it was definitely coming. They've had a bit of bad luck over the last few weeks. And Ulster, have they really been tested? There was a lot of home games for them at the start of the season. So this was their first big test. It looked like Connacht really had a chip on their shoulder. And, it showed. I think all the week there was talk of, what's the capacity going to be like in the Viva? There was a lot of outside noise. I think Kieran Marmion, I think, put it out there saying, a lot of talk about Nathan Doak. Obviously, he's been fantastic, but Kieran Marmion put the point and said, well, let's see how you go on the big stage. Now, Nathan Doak had a super game, wasn't poor, but it did show that this Ulster team is a young There's a lot of new faces. This was a big, big Interpro game. And unfortunately, it was Connacht that really deserved the win. There's no bones about it, you know.
Connacht do a really good last half defensive job, and there's a little bit of afters.
The aggression from Connacht was really superb, wasn't it? Like you said, they had a chip on their shoulder. They were annoyed after last week, but also really kind of found it difficult to get some momentum getting in the game. They just didn't seem to. Yeah. They're always on the back foot.
We've got Murray try cover here the first try. I mean, this is a second roll out in a break here. Like, he did really well to finish here.
Yeah, it was a fantastic offload as well to get the pass away and the tackle, you know, hitting the front line. And yeah, I think Ulster, like there's moments in games, and that was a big, big moment for them to break through. And it was a fantastic finish. So in my day, second rows weren't able to do that. So obviously a young lad there too, taking it really well. So you said it, the niggle, it was every opportunity. It was very stop-start at times. Andrew Brace as well, it was a difficult game to manage because I think every breakdown, it was just, there could have been penalties both sides. But take away that, I mean, Connacht took their chances, you know.
Yeah, poor Billy Burns thrown two intercepts as well. Obviously makes the scoreline flattering, but like the Connacht players were just pressing up so much. Like, their attitude in defence was incredible, I thought. And that's what got them these intercepts. And that guy, Mac
Hansen. He can't stop scoring tries. That's, wow. I mean, I'm sick of talking about him on this show. Every week we've got a Mac Hansen, and he's been up for try the week, I think, two shows in a row. I mean, look, we saw the Munster game last week as well. They probably should have won that game. They were very unlucky in that game. Do you know what people are looking at? They've lost three games this season. They only have one win. The Dragons game, probably, that's the one game they're probably going to look at themselves and go, they really shouldn't have lost that game, and the manner in which they lost. But you can see, but at the same time, if I'm a Connacht fan now, are you not just kind of pulling your hair out going, why can't we play like this every week?
Well, there's a great spine to that Connacht team now. Yeah. And, you know, the Irish squad was just announced. Could there be more Connacht players maybe put in there? Have Ulster won maybe a few of those 50-50 calls for the sort of fringe guys? And they've probably, I think, you know, you talk of Boyle, you talk of Madison, Oliver, you know, the Connacht back row were outstanding. And yeah, look, I think all that emotional edge obviously matters. And you and Connacht are always going to be dangerous in the Interpro. You throw in those extra incentives, extra bite or chip on your shoulders, and we did get, you know, we did, unfortunately, we did get bullied.
There was a lot of big incidents in the game, wasn't there?
There was a lot of big incidents, you know, and that's just
the Henderson incident coming up here, like, that's a big one.
Again, careful, the ferocity of the Connacht defence. Heffernan picks the man up, Boyle combines.
Yeah, like, this is obviously hard to watch as an Ulster fan, but I mean, look, it's dangerous, it's reckless from Heffernan there, taking him up and lifting him up, and then unfortunately Alan O'Connor, who, you know, would, I mean, I can understand his mindset of your teammates in trouble, you want to help them out, but it is reckless with the shoulder.
Yeah.
From an Ulster point of view, you see then the Heffernan comes in and pushes Rob Herring and creates that extra.
Do you think Herring said something there or something? Do you think something was said? Do you wonder, is he that kind of character?
Honestly, I don't think he is. I wouldn't say that Rob Herring would be. He's quite a cool, calm character. But it just shows you that, you know, another day that could have gone a different way. You know, if Alan Connor doesn't hit him, you know, who knows what could have happened there.
Yeah.
And it's just an example of the dominance, I guess, that Connor would bring into that, the intensity of the line speed and making the hit. So, yeah, disappointing.
Yeah.
Another intercept as well from Gilgallon. Really outstanding here. You read the game really well, to nearly score onto the sticks.
You were talking about him before we got on. You saying that he's pretty much a freak in the gym.
Oh, so he came into the sevens team for a few weeks and his scores are off the charts. Like, his jumping, his speed, like, he's one of the best athletes, if not the best athlete I've seen in the last while. So he's definitely up and coming, and I can see him doing this more often every week if he just gets the game time.
They have a lot of good players in their squad. That's the thing, like, just putting it all together.
There's some
serious talent, especially in their back line. They've got backs that can really move and can spread the ball wide, and guys that can get on the outside and guys that can, you know, really cause problems.
And you have to remember, Bundy Aki wasn't even playing in that game. He's probably the best centre in Ireland. Yeah. So, like, there's a lot going on in the sports ground, and I think Connacht will be very good for the rest of the season.
It's Connacht all the way, and they are going to finish it with an exclamation mark. Away comes Hansen, his second, Connacht's fifth, and that is as emphatic as anyone could have expected from either side.
There's our pal again, Mac Hansen.
Chris, do you think Ulster fans should be a bit worried about the performance from yesterday?
I mean, I don't think it's too early to be too concerned. I think that they've had, like, black and white is they're still, I think, what, second in the league. They've won the games of bonus points. Has it been pretty? No. This is just, it is. Look, it is a wake-up call. Probably exactly what the players do need if you're taking a positive spin on it. I guess it's always us that worry about, you know, you're in the big stage getting bullied. You know, that is, and I think if maybe perhaps not looking for excuses, but I think if maybe a different referee on the day, Andrew Brace, I think, as I said, with the breakdown, Ulster just couldn't get into their flow. They couldn't keep speed. And the other thing was the line-out maul, or the maul defence from Connacht, outstanding. Like, Ulster always usually score. Like, Ian Henderson, just out of the Rory Best playbook, don't take the threes, we'll go down the line. But they usually scored the moment from the maul tries. I think, like, Rob Herring and Bradley Roberts, of most try scorers, I think, in Ulster, we didn't score from the maul. The Connacht defence of the maul was outstanding. So I think a few things, if you can fix that, tweak that, it could have been a different ball game for us. But yeah, it's hard to, what a day for me to come on the podcast and it's all doom and gloom for
Ulster. Because it's Connacht, wasn't it? I mean, like, let's not forget, Ulster were 4 from 4, 4 bonus points into this game, missing a lot of players in those first few games. Is it just because of the fact that not even the scoreline, it just hurts that little bit more, to, like, those provincial games? I presume when you were playing, they're the ones you really want to win.
Yeah, of course, it means an awful, awful lot. That's why I kind of alluded to already about those extra incentives for Connacht. For Ulster point of view, I guess, if you're looking at black and white, Henderson had a great game, Stuart McCluskey had a good game, but the problem is that when a team stopped those two, then what's the plan B? What's the next step out? And yeah, unfortunately, Ulster just couldn't, without speed of ball, the rest of the players didn't really get an opportunity to shine. Like Rob Balakum, we would have loved to have seen him with the ball in space. Mm. Nick Timney obviously had great news this week about getting the Irish squad. You know, he had a few moments, but let's be honest, the Connacht back row negated him. So yeah, an Ulster perspective, it's not complete doom and gloom. We'll bounce back, but
of course, it's only one game. Like, only last week we were talking about how good Ulster are. So exactly, they just met a really good Connacht, and Ulster definitely have a really good players as well. So look how many of them made the Irish team, young fellas in the team there. So Ulster are fine.
Next up, we had Cardiff Dragons. A very good game here, 31-29 this game finished. The big incident in this game, and the big talking point, was the Lilo red card. I don't think you can have too many complaints here, guys. It's he comes in, he's upright, shoulder into the jaw of Sam Davies, and I don't think he can say much. I think it's a red card.
But the letter of the law, it is pretty bad. It's shoulder, it's straight into the face, like, and that is a red card. I think Sam Davies made a bit of a meal of it, but you don't want to really see that in rugby, grabbing his face. But it's not ideal, a shoulder into the face like that.
Yeah, it's a big collision, and obviously you want to smash the 10 on the opportunities you can, but yeah, that's reckless, so I don't think he'll have any complaints.
Yeah, interesting game. I mean, Dragons scored 4 tries in that game, and Cardiff only scored 2. They kicked their penalties, like, and came away with a good win. But moving on, for the first time in the show, we have to move on to Munster are finally in the loser section, unfortunately, and rightfully so. I think they were very disappointing against Ospreys last night. Very disappointing.
Yeah, they didn't show up at all, really, did they, Munster? But like, they had a few changes in the team, and I don't know, they just never really got going. What did you make for Chris?
Yeah, I think, like, the penalty count obviously didn't help them too. Sloppy errors that you've sort of been haven't seen as much with Munster of late. My own perspective, I guess. It was always going to be like Tag Byrne going to go at 6. It was great to see the Lions players come back in. But I think it was just so much rotation for the Munster side, which I was surprised about. You know, I think like when a team has momentum, you kind of want to give some players a run of games.
And Jack Crowley, as he sees some green space. Oh, that's a gem. An absolute gem of a 50-22.
You, Jack Crowley there, like, coming in, like, at his kick there. Like, I mean, Jack Crowley, he's a guy we don't know much about. And, like, how many tens have Munster started this year? Do you know what I mean? Like, and Crowley's a guy, I mean, that's an interesting one. Myself and Greg were chatting about last night. Ron Nagar actually tried to sign him last January for La Rochelle. So he's obviously pretty highly,
if they're
one of the best
like,
tens that have ever played the game, who's now one of the best coaches in the game, is looking to sign this 21-year-old. He's highly rated.
Look at him in the game. He was a brilliant tackler. Made his first up tackles every time. Yeah. It was really great.
He's highly regarded. Yeah, he started really well. He's nice little kicks in behind. He had a really nice 50-22 at one stage. But he's highly regarded in Irish rugby. Like, Ronan O'Gara, obviously, he's Cork man. Jack Crowley's a Cork man. So I think there was a couple of phone calls trying to pull him over to La Rochelle. But Jack wanted to play for Munster, and he stuck around, and he said no to the supposed offer. And he actually was in the sevens team for a while. He got a few caps, and he was incredible there, his ball skills. So I said, Joey Carver, you want to watch his heels? Jack Crowley's coming up behind him as well.
Yeah.
I think this try might be chalked off. What do you think, Shane? I think who's in front? Is it Lochman?
Instruction.
Lochman or John Ryan?
After the shift, there's players in front of the ball.
Okay. I think once we had a disallowed try earlier on as well by Niall Scanlon, that could have went either way. I remember looking at it and I thought he was complaining about Lochman, but it's actually John Ryan that is ahead of Byrne here. coming into this, and it's so annoying because it's such a beautifully well-executed line-out. It's almost picture-perfect. And I think if they'd scored that, like, you know, once to get the momentum 15 minutes in, probably a good chance that they're going to go on to win that game. But heads kind of dropped after that, and I don't know. I'm disappointed anyway.
It was a messy performance a little bit by Munster, wasn't it, at times?
Yeah, I think I agree with that too. And yeah, I mean, look, I laugh at this with the backs coming in. That's one of the things I really miss about rugby. Whenever, you know, they've obviously planned that, haven't they, during the week? Yeah. The backs get in and do them all. And yeah, it's just unfortunate that didn't work. And they're pivotal. They're small moments of games, but big outcomes, you know. And if they, you know, if that, as you said, if that try happens, the whole momentum changes, and who knows what could happen.
They've got to be winning those games at the end of the day. Like, I mean, they started the season really well. I'm not trying to take away from Ospreys, but, you know, look at even Munster's bench there. They had, like, Damian Delinda coming off the bench, Conor Murray, Ben Healy. They had the likes of Peter Manny in there starting, Ty Byrne in there starting. They're all British and Irish Lions and Springboks. Ospreys didn't exactly have a superstar team out. Like, the other games, if Munster really want to kick on and not just be, you know, the second best to Leinster and kick on, they need to win those games. They really do.
Of course, and you don't want to be bringing on a long-range kicker to try and get a losing bonus point at the end of a game. Like, that's not Munster. Do you know what I mean? Munster win these games. So hopefully it was just a kind of a down week for them and they can pick it back up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lovely mull here from Munster.
They do, because everyone is flying in. Where's that ball? Rhys Davies has got to be careful not swimming through there. I think Munster are going for this. Just Andrew Conway left on his own. Where is that ball? Where is it? Who's got it? Has Craig Casey got it? I think he has. And he's on the deck.
Craig Casey did the honours by getting the try. I think it's a bit unfair. The forwards do all the hard work and then he gets that try at the end.
I thought like after this, like, they were going to kick on, but they just didn't for some reason, which kind of was bizarre, to be honest with you.
You know, every back that's hit this thinks that they've created that try, right?
Yeah.
So delighted.
Yeah. No, it was a really good team try. You can see everybody coming off the back line running in to give them the push. So it just shows how much it means to them as well.
Yeah.
Getting over that line. But Ospreys were, you know, brilliant. They really, I think they're growing each week with confidence, and you can see that, you know, they were missing a lot of their international players, and they performed really well.
Of course, Myler kicked very well as well. Mm. That was like the really big difference. He was just getting his kicks, and he's always a very good player for Ospreys, so can't take it away from them, as you're saying, Megan. They were very good.
Interesting one there as well. Jack Regan from Offaly came off the bench for Ospreys.
It's amazing. He's had some journey. From leaving Ulster, my last couple of years with Ulster, when I probably wasn't getting the team as much, I would have spent a good bit of time with Jack in the gym, and if I played a few A games and things, and I have to say, like, top guy, and his journey going to the Highlanders, and I think it was Otago, and then coming over to Ospreys now, it's amazing for him, and he is a fantastic player. What I always loved was his lineout. The way he was able to run the lineout was brilliant for such a young kid, and he was able to throw himself in there. So I'd expect him to hopefully have a long career at Ospreys. Hopefully now they've given him an opportunity to really impose himself, you know.
I love players with that attitude as well. Like, a lot of guys kind of think, okay, if I don't make it my province, or if one of the other provinces aren't interested in me, that's it, I'll just give up now and I'll go get a job somewhere else. But he was like, no, I know I can make it, and he went there, literally travelled the world in search of contracts, and now he's back with a top team with a contract. He just didn't give up. Or a lot of guys do give up, unfortunately, because they feel like, oh, if I'm not going to make it in the more provinces, I'm not going to bother travelling to the other side of the world trying to get a contract.
It's such small margins, you know. You need a coach to, you know, you need to do the right thing at the right time, be injury-free for a coach to give you your backing. And I know I think he suffered a lot of niggly injuries.
Yeah.
And I think he's in a good place now. So I would say I'd be surprised if we don't hear, you know, a lot more from Jack Regan over the rest of the season.
Could be a Ty Byrne kind of case, like, where he might kick on here, like, and get pulled back over and could be in an Irish squad, like, for all we know, you know what I mean? Like,
it's very common to happen with Chris Farrell as well. He was in Grenoble and then they pulled him back to Ireland. So if Jack Regan keeps playing like that, he'll probably get pulled back at some stage.
Excellent. Look, moving on, guys, to poor Zebra, rock bottom of the standings now. They lost 27-10 to Edinburgh at home. They haven't really shown much this season, have they, to be honest?
No, they're not going well, Zebra. At home as well, they got a big beating off Edinburgh. I think they only have, as you said, 1 point off five games. It's not ideal for them, especially with Benetton Treviso doing so well. It just doesn't look good for Zebra. So hopefully now they kind of pick it back up, because 1 point after five games isn't good for them.
Yeah, definitely. We want to try the week, guys?
Yes, let's do it. So nominations for try of the weekend.
He's got Blacker on his shoulder. What a score this is going to be for the Scarlets. Turnover ball, loose ball. Look out, Benetton.
First up, we have Dane Blacker for the Scarlets.
Oh, yes, this is a great, really good team try here.
It was a very good team try.
Scarlett's just is this the second or third time Scarlett's have been nominated for a try of the week? Like, they love a good team try, don't they?
Dude, this is like 7th year throwing the ball
look
around.
Look at that for an offload. There's Scott Williams, as you were mentioning earlier on. Like, that's a look at that for a run.
Yeah. Scrum half running. That idea has come half line straight up the middle of the pitch. He actually scores a second one in this game, very similar.
Chris, would you remember back in the day when you were playing, would you be throwing around the ball as much as they are in this clip?
Well, no, you see, I would be the one who made the, made the turnover and was still getting up by the time the try was scored. So it shows you, I mean, the modern game now, turnover ball is just massive, you know, and that's why this try scored. It was a sloppy mistake and the ball was passed two passes. So.
Want to run and Keller, I'll show you, lads. Look, wait till you see Keller step at the end of this. Like.
And he's got Keller dancing down the touchline. One big fend from the hooker. He's almost there. He is there.
First of all, it's lovely offloads here from Leinster, but I can't get over Keller's step at the end. It's even better from the other angle.
He's just so dangerous with the ball in hand, isn't he? You just mistake him for a back.
Very dynamic, yeah.
Yeah, really agile.
I'd arguably say he's the best hooker in Ireland at the moment, being able to do stuff like this. Handing off the other hooker and then switching the ball. You see that?
Brilliant.
He switched the hands.
The balance.
Which is like just, some wingers don't even do that internationally. Oh.
And outside of his porch, and he's got gas. Oh, what a finish! What a finish!
Oh, this is Porchy's try. This is another great team try. The finish by Porch here, I think anyone that's played in the wing, I mean, like you both played on the wing, guys. I mean, this is a tough finish here. He does really well here.
He does do really well. But Mike Lowry, I don't know what he's doing turning his hips in.
Yeah.
Like, you just keep your hips up the pitch and that's what... getting the space, but still an incredible finish.
I think it was difficult here. Ethan McIlroy sort of gets maybe a bit lost, and Lowry's a bit, two minds about something as well.
He's
so
a 2-on-1 there, isn't there?
Yeah. To get to score a try off first phase like that, it's tough to watch from my perspective.
First phase try,
it's tough.
No, that's hard. Like, that's three very different tries. I mean, you've got the Scarlett's try, that's really well worked team try. You've got the Keller one, which is well worked, but it's more.
Individual.
It's a hooker stepping like, I mean, I'm sure like Bessie wasn't stepping like that back in the day. Like,
it was at the end of the career, it was hookers and sevens were told, right, you have to stay on the wing channel. I'm going, oh no, please, don't mock, keep me in the middle.
Well, I know, and then like Porch, then I suppose that's the kind of technical try. Like, I know you can give out about Lowry and stuff, but like, that's a real winger's finish.
Yeah. It was.
I'm torn.
It's an incredible set piece move. I'm going to vote for that one, I think, as a set piece move. But
I'm going to go for the Scarlets. I think it's great watching them, keeping the ball alive, just keeping the momentum going. And I love a good offload, so I'm going to go for that one.
Okay, I'm going to pick Keller.
Okay, we've three.
So I would be very much, the Scarlets says team tries great, but I have to say Keller to do that is. Yeah. I mean, you. I think other weeks you've given team tries. Let's give it to someone who's that is.
Let's give a bit of individual
that's a unique
brilliance
thing for a hooker to do. So I think, we've got to give it to
Keller. And Keller.
Sounds good. That's okay. Bam, guys. Will we move on to the small matter of Andy Farrell's Autumn Nation series squad? Here's Andy here. Nothing too massively surprising. If we look at the squad, obviously, I suppose. The standouts in the backs, obviously, Simon Zima coming back in, his first time in the squad since June 2017. I think that was always going to come, simply the fact that like the deal to bring him back from Racing to Munster was actually partly funded by the RFU. So I think he was always going to be in Andy Farrell's plans. And he's playing well this year. James Lowe is back in the squad again. I know he's been in and out. I mean, we've all kind of brought attention to the fact that he's not the best in defence. It's an area he needs to work on. So that's something we're going to keep a close eye on this year. Kieran Frawley brought in from Leinster, uncapped. There's a guy that started off as a 10, bulked up and is now playing 12. So maybe he could be using that dual playmaker role. Looking at Spalacoon is in the squad. James Hume is someone we've talked about it for the last couple of weeks that we're hoping to get in, but he's back in the squad again after impressing in the summer. He's been excellent for Ulster this year. Looking into the forwards, Nick Timoney, great to see him in there. I mean, I think he's been scoring tries for fun this year. Absolutely, try-scoring machine. But as we all expect him to be in there, but you know yourself, given the depth that's in the back row, he very, very easily could have missed out. And Dan Sheehan's another big one. What do you think, guys?
It's great to see Jack Ireland in the squad. After coming back from the Lions, you know, they were saying that he needs to come in now and absolutely own that jersey, you know, go in with a little bit of je ne sais quoi, I suppose, you know, maybe not in an arrogant way, but, you know, confident, because, you know, he's kind of been playing on the back foot in the Irish jersey before, but he needs to be confident and own that. What do you think of that, Chris?
I think he's so important for Ireland now. So I think the decision in the back row with Jamie Heaslip, I still, you compare Jack Cohen to Jamie Heaslip? No, you can't yet. But if Jack Cunha gets a proper run of international rugby with the best players around him, there's no reason why. Like, Jamie Heaslip has been consistent for so long, dominated the number 8 shirt, and now it's Jack Cunha's turn to take it on. And they are similar in regards to that. You know, there's games where you probably don't actually notice them just as much. The big carries are sort of given, but Jamie Heaslip never made a mistake. Very rarely give away a penalty. It was just a really high level of consistency every game. Jack Cunha, you can sort of see the similarity. So I think there's all these decisions, of course, about the back row and all the combinations, but Jack Cunha, I think, has got a massive part to play in Ireland now for the next few seasons. But therefore, just taking autumn in its own context.
Yeah. And CJ Sand has gone as well. And I suppose he made started for the Lions in most of the matches, didn't he?
Jack Cunha started every game. He is the man. Like, he's the best number 8.
You've got Doris and Coombs there as well. It's crazy to think that a guy can start 3 tests for the Lions and not be guaranteed to start for Ireland because the competition there is that tough.
And it's Adam Farrell, I think, has the strength of character. He would make that big ballsy call if he doesn't feel it's right, you know. So
if you were to pick Chris, your back row for the Irish team, who would you be?
Oh, good question.
So I mean, it's a difficult answer, but I mean I'm going to be biased because I feel that with Ireland play well, it's the speed of, so for Irish backline and the forwards to get their carries, they need speed of ruck. So for me, I think Van der Flyer never has let Ireland down. When he's taken out even the Leinster team and he's thrown back in, always performs. And I personally think that for him to start at 7, I think Ireland get the best out of the whole team.
Okay.
So I would have him at 7. I think Stander has to be at 8, and then it's a decision.
Stander's gone now.
Sorry, Conan has to be the 8, and then it's about the 6 and 2. If I was making the call, depending on the line out that we need, I think Tadhg Byrne is not, like, he was a reason why he was on the Lions, because he's incredible
player,
at turnovers.
Yeah.
And as we talked about, the turnover ball now is so important. And then Cale Norris has to be, you know, and I'm not going to forget about Peter Manley, because Peter Manley has delivered so many times. And leadership is going to be important too, because there's so many youngsters. So having Peter around and on the bench might be a fantastic thing too. But I know it's probably not, that's not the answer.
I wanted to go, we spoke about the back row, but I actually want to talk about, you know, the back three. You know, I'm really interested in being a winger. You know, you have Zeebo back.
He hasn't been in the jersey since
2017. So it's great to see him back. So there is talks, you know, the other guys coming through, they've got a lot more pace. They work a lot harder in the games.
Yeah, Keenan will definitely be in the 15 jersey.
Yeah, I think so.
Too consistent. He plays every week for Leinster, plays really well every week for Leinster. Yep. So it's the two wingers. I'd put Zeebo in myself because I just think Zeebo's exciting. He's going to bring a bit of flair to the back line. Yeah. And then I actually don't know who'd be on there.
Zeebo and Earl Z, I suppose. Get the band back together.
It'd be Conor Murray, Earl Z, Peter Mahoney, and Zeebo. That's a dangerous combination, even in the crack around the team, right? So that's going to bring something too. You know, they're a dangerous wee group to be together.
Yeah.
The Mafia, definitely. I think they call themselves, right?
So, that's it, the Mafia. It's Murray and Zeebo and the lads. And the rest.
Exactly,
it's good to see him get back in. And it's good, as you said there, like, you've got Balakoon there as well. You've got James Lowe. You've got Andrew Conway. Mm-hmm. It's good to be saying we can't pick a squad. Like, there was, for a long time, for too many years with Ireland, it was, the squad literally picked itself. The actual starting 15 picked itself. Yeah. Now it's impossible, which is a sign of Ireland improving and getting better depth.
And I love that there's so many young fellas in the squad as well. I know it's a 38-man squad, but there's so many young guys coming through. Like, you have your Caelan Doris, your Nick Timney's 25. You have Balakoon, as you mentioned there. Like,
Dan Sheehan coming in.
There's so many young fellas. And then there's so many guys still at provinces that haven't even got called in that could have. So Irish rugby's in a great place, and I'm really interested to see how they get on the next couple of games.
There's no easy game, my. There's no easy game, Japan, Argentina. So that's where it'd be so interesting to see how are they going to rotate as much as what we maybe expect them to. Can they rotate? If it's a bad start, do they have to go out every week? The one player I have no doubt and who's going to have an unbelievable autumn is Johnny Sexton, surely.
Yeah.
You know, after his not getting in the Lions, so much talk about who's after Johnny. Knowing Johnny is sitting at home and cannot wait to just, again, prove everyone.
He loves playing against the All Blacks as well. Another boy at the All Blacks. Yeah. You know?
Are you surprised, Chris, that Carberry got selected?
Truthfully, I haven't seen enough of him playing since he's been back. But look, I've seen him when he's at his best, and I think you've got to probably stick with him, and then it's about working out who's after that. Jack Cardy, Billy Burns,
Burns in there now.
Harry and Brennan. So it's just about. Someone just has to go and unfortunately grab it and take it.
No one has, unfortunately. That's the problem.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
That's the problem. Johnny's going to be playing at least mid-40s at this stage where things are gone.
Yeah.
And he's playing better than ever, nearly. He's incredible.
And he plays better when he makes the next step up with Ireland too, with the better players around him, and that, you know, the big, when the pressure's really on him.
Yeah.
And he's got a chip on his shoulder, and so yeah, it's going to be.
I presume they're going to pinpoint the New Zealand game as well as the main game, and try out the other out halves maybe against Japan and then the other fixture.
Against Japan.
Well, that's the thing.
Against Japan,
beat us in the World Cup, right? You know, Japan are close.
Like, you can rotate your back row and you can rotate your your back three, but can you really rotate?
You
can't.
Because you have to have someone to control the game. Mm. And obviously we know Sexton does that really well. And that's where we've kind of seen Jerry Carberry fall a little bit short, is that kind of control of the match, making those right decisions. Confidence might be a little bit of a thing for him. But
I think it's beyond a window. I mean, what's the point in starting Johnny Sexton against Japan and you win? And like, I know it's all great, like, but would you rather lose that game by a couple of points and have Joey Carberry play really well and come on, or have Harry Byrne come on and give him that time in that test window? I can, you know what I mean? I know you want to win games at the end of the day.
You lose before the All Blacks. You know, if you get a win, then it's...
It's tough.
It's hard decisions, yeah.
But poor Johnny isn't going to be around forever. He has to bow out at some stage. Have you played against All Blacks? Have you?
So I played against All Blacks once, and we got beaten record points, 60 points to 3.
Oh, that game.
So the context of that was my first cap was 2 years before that.
Yeah.
So I was on the bench in that last test. So we lost the game 60 points to 3. I played, I think it was 12 minutes. We're all in the change rooms. Obviously, everyone's devastated, but I'm in the corner going, finally not a one cap wonder. I'm off one cap wonder. So I'm like, yes. So it was a bad day for Irish rugby, but it was my second cap.
Yeah.
We had a long two years. So I was like, yep, I'll take any cap to get me off the one cap wonder.
New Zealand are still at it. Like, I watched the match last night and I tuned in, and at halftime, I think they were winning 68-14 against USA.
Yeah.
So they're still clocking up those points even now to this day.
Yeah.
You know, I just wonder. Yeah, they'll do the same against
Ireland. They scored over 100 points against USA. And USA are a decent outfit. I know they've probably dropped off a little bit in the last couple of seasons, but like, New Zealand they're going to be out for Ireland as well. That's always a massive game, so I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yep, definitely are tough.
And speaking of Irish rugby, the women's team is after changing coach, haven't they, Megan?
Yes, I was just going to say, Adam Griggs, he's been part of the squad the last three or four years, and he announced he's moving away last week, and Mick Williams is taking over. He actually was one of the coaches for when the women went to the World Cup back in 2014. He was an assistant coach at the time, and they obviously got through to the semi-final. So it's a big loss, obviously, for Adam, you know, moving on. But it's great to see a fresh face, you know, with some experience with the women's team before coming into the squad.
Mm.
What have you done much about? Have you following the women's side?
Like, obviously, there's been like some great highs and now the lows of the World Cup. But I think, you know, from a player perspective, sometimes when you've taken, it's taken, obviously, I'm sure the players, it's been such a emotional roller coaster of not making the big stage that they've gone, actually, a change up can be a good thing moving forward. And it's hard to be any professional coach nowadays, no matter who you're coaching. Like, what coach really stays that long? You know, so is it really hard, I guess. But I think from the women's players' perspective, I guess it's probably refreshing of a change up.
I'd agree with you. Yeah,
yeah.
Timing is right, isn't it? Timing is right, after losing that Rugby Cup qualifier,
a big blow that's moved park it and move forward as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And,
So. Have you been talking to the girls at all, Megan? What do they think of it?
I haven't actually spoken to too many about it. Actually, it's quite a surprise to a lot of us as well. You know, it was really out of the blue that he came on to Skype and announced he's moving away. So I haven't had a chance to really speak to them about it now.
Yeah.
But
well, hopefully the change up now does help Irish women to get to the places where they deserve to be, like the World Cups and the big tournaments. So sad for Adam Griggs, but it's exciting for Irish rugby.
And he's not leaving immediately, right? Is that incorrect?
Yeah, you're right. He's actually leaving after the autumn internationals. The girls are playing Japan and USA, so
he gets a send off. Yeah, that's nice it. Way,
It'll be good matches for the girls.
Excellent.
Very definitely good. Yeah. So now, Chris, we actually went out to social media and asked them to get some questions for you, and there's some really good ones. So if you're ready, Jason's going to kick us off.
I mean, I'm not ready, but go.
Yeah. We've got Max Porter. He was wondering, are you available to play against Highfield this weekend? Do you know Max, do you?
I do know Max Porter very well from Milling Rugby Club. Unfortunately, I'm not available, but if I was, I'd be taking his position because he's a back rower. So I'm surprised he sent that one in.
So you're not going down to play a game in Cork, not around for it.
I would love to play just for the bus trip home, but no, I'll skip this week, I think.
Do you have an itch to play at all anymore? Would you like to get back in for at least a game anywhere?
So I've played a few charity games since I've retired. And honestly, before you think, oh gosh, I'm feeling good here, I might play well. And then the realization hits and you're like, no, I'm so ready to retire. So no, I think unfortunately that's my playing days. Properly hung up.
You say that now. You'll get the itch.
Yeah, well, Gareth Morrow was asking who was the toughest player you've ever played against.
So toughest player. There's a lot of tough players I've played against over the years. The obvious ones, like Paul Connolly, was always one I always said I loved that I was able to play with the man against him. He was so tough. Like he was able to just.
Oh wow.
No matter what was happening, the game was always off his feet or up on his feet. So he was a tough player. The other player that I always think is toughest was Nick Williams. And again, someone else who I was able to play with and against.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to ask actually, who was the toughest player you played with?
Well, sorry, I answered the question.
Yeah, 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 no,
he was a real tough man. And typical Mari, you know, whenever I was playing with him, you know, Nick would make a massive hit and then you wouldn't see him for maybe, 78 minutes and I'd be hitting all his rucks. And the next minute, boom, he'd smash someone else again. So he was amazing to play with. And then I remember playing against him for Ulster. I think he was like, when he was in Italy, so it might have been Aroni maybe at the time.
Yeah.
And it was Willie Falloon, myself and the flankers. And I remember all week we talked about, right, let's just double tackle Nick. Let's make sure he doesn't get the offloads away. And I think he made about 8 offloads whenever both of us were on him every time. You think you've locked
huge
him up.
Huge man, like, isn't
oh,
he?
Oh, the hits were just ridiculous. So, great guy to have in your team, not to play against.
Yeah. Our next question comes from Peter Juan is his name. And he writes, always thought you were clued in on the rules nearly more than anyone, which is a nice compliment. Were you 100% certain your try against the Ospreys was legal when you somehow dotted it down?
Yeah, no, I always loved that try. I just knew that was the rules. As soon as the ball went behind the try line, it was free game. So it wasn't like I was purposely looking for that, but I did know that was one of the rules that was allowed. And I think we got a bonus point from that try. And it was always one of my ones when I look back and go, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a bit, I didn't score many for Ulster, obviously, less at the back of them all. So that was a nice wee try.
Did you kind of make a point of learning the like small rules of the game, the ones that people would know, or you just happened
not,
to
no,
know?
No, not overly. I mean, look at the way the game went as well. We were, for every pre-season, it was a change. It used to drive me mad. They used to change the rules so much every pre-season. They get a referee in, the big talk. And like, the rugby, the core game is, you can focus too much on one thing. And I mean, you want to develop the game moving forward, but for me, it was about, you knew the basics of the game, so it wasn't, I wasn't a complete rugby nerd, if that's what you're asking about the rules, it certainly wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And even whenever I was very, very, very rarely captain of the team, but when I was, it was usually when Rory was injured, and they'd always freak out going, hold on here, I need to check up a wee bit, in case an incident happened, and there wasn't as much TMO even at the start of my career and things, and I'm glad I'm not, I'd be worried about doing that sort of rule now because there's just so much changes.
I was going to ask you, what do you think of all the rules changes and the new features in the rugby nowadays?
I'm not playing it, so I don't know. But as a player, I do think I would be frustrated. There's so much changing every season.
Yeah.
You learn one thing. The big thing that ruined my career, sure, was the choke tackle. The rules around choke tackles. Yeah. Oh, here we go. That's me out of the game now. but part of it. You want to make the game safer. You want to make the game, that any rule that makes the game safer, of course, you're all for it. And faster. And I think the big one, from my perspective, is the substitution thing maybe is something that I think should be addressed about bringing your impact subs on.
Mm.
Front row players now are trained just to be able to do 30 minutes or 40 minutes. And I think that, from my perspective, to be able to keep players on the pitch where there's more space at the end of the game might be something.
Okay.
We only make those substitutions through a valid injury. Yeah. Would be something I think would be good for the game, safer for the game. But
Little John over on Instagram, he wants to know your thoughts on Andy Farrell's progress. Like, and basically, if you think he's the right guy for the job, and if he's actually made progress since he came in.
Well, I think he's definitely the right man for the job at the moment. I think that the only thing I can relay is the conversations I've had with current players who are with him. I was very much on the way out whenever he was coming in. I had a few conversations with him and most importantly, seemed like a really, really good guy. And if you have a good coach that you actually respect and want to play for, he definitely, the feeling is that he's not as, real detailed as what Joe was, but he's certainly getting, the best out of his team. And I think this will be a really exciting lead into the World Cup with him and to see where we go from, because he's got the pedigree. He's coached the top. He's he's coached the Lions. He's been around some really good players. So
he's got a good squad as well.
Yeah, he's got a great squad. Mm. So yeah, I like that he's bringing in, you know, the new blood as well and making the ballsy calls. So
yeah, that's it. You need someone to sound afraid to make those calls. That's always a good sign, isn't it? Yeah.
Giving people a chance. Yeah, exactly. Chris, this one's about your accent. Cormac McLenns would like to know if you were born with the BT9 accent or was it forged in the trenches over the years? I don't know, where's BT9?
So BT9, for your other viewers from, not for Northern Ireland, is like a posh D4 accent. I don't understand why he's thinking that. I mean, I grew up in the countryside, so I don't have a Ballymena accent, but I think I've had to speak. People, teammates have to understand what you're trying to say, right? So, but I'm from Malone Rugby Club, East Belfast, so I don't think I have a posh accent, but thanks, Cormac, lovely question. Yeah. Cheers for that.
Cheers. Another question we got in is, someone was wondering, do you have any career regrets? I know that might be a weird question, but do you look back at anything that you wish you could change about your career, or are you happy the way it went?
I don't have too many regrets. I would love to have won something with Ulster, obviously, but truthfully, there wasn't many seasons where we probably deserved to win. One of the years was in the 2000 and I think it was it 2012, a quarterfinal with Jarrett and Saracens at home in the quarterfinal against Saracens with Jarrett Payne, went up for the ball and Alex Good fell. Yeah. And he got red carded, and he was, I think it happened in the first like sort of 6-7 minutes, and we still were very close to winning the game. And I do think that maybe that year, like, we had, that was a pack of John Afoa, Rory Best, Tom Court, Johan Muller, and Dan Toohey, a front five. Sure, you know, that's a serious, that's the best Ulster front five we ever had, probably. Yeah. And do I think we could have gone on and maybe won that year? Possibly. Mm. So that was a regret in Ulster point of view. In an Irish point of view, no regrets, because, I mean, I never thought I was going to get one cap for Ireland, and I got, you know, a good 24 caps, so yeah. I was delighted. And
I love that. No regrets.
That's with the green jersey, you know. So,
you had an amazing career, man, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was, you know, I look back and go, so lucky to have played for one cap for Ulster, and then the rest was just...
Yeah.
It's a shame that your kids never got to see you play.
It is a shame.
1-year-old and 2-year-old, you're a busy man.
Yeah, 1-year-old, 2-year-old. But you know what? I look back at some of my friends in college who had kids when they were playing, and now I totally understand the amount of complaining they did, because to play professional rugby when you have young kids like that, tough. It is tough going. Mm. And the partners having to look after the kids, like, it's a huge sacrifice. So I don't know. I love my sleep. And I think I would have really struggled if I was playing to have kids. So if I had kids when I was playing. So listen.
It's a lovely story, and you have your jerseys up on the wall, and you can tell your kids about it, like, it's great, and you can watch back the videos as well.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you think about those jerseys you have, the caps you have, I think it's gonna be brilliant to be able to pass those on to your kids. Yeah. Right. So and they have seen me play a few charity games, which they're gonna laugh at me, and if my body doesn't completely fall apart, I'll try to keep doing that throughout the year.
Might see you in the playing against Highfield. But on the flip side, your biggest career achievement?
Oh, 2014 Six Nations win in championship. So I got to play. It was the first time where I felt that, only time I really played with Sean O'Brien was injured, right? That's to be honest. So I never really got to play with Sean that much, because when he was fit, he was obviously incredible player. But that was the first time where I felt like I was playing probably good enough to get that jersey. You know, there were times, like, I was very much in my career, was always massive part of my motivation was the fear of letting people down. You're going, how am I playing with these players? I need to perform to not let them down. Mm-hmm. And I felt that's run of Six Nations games, I played every game. The final game in France and Paris, I mean, that was just,
I remember that game.
That was the highlight, you know, without a doubt. Like, just great to, I think the relief we felt when we won that. It was just something else, you know. Brilliant.
It's a good one.
Do you keep much memorabilia now from all that kind of stuff? Like, we're on about cap stuff. Do you keep programs and stuff, or obviously you have like your medals and whatnot and your caps? And do you keep many jerseys, or do you swap many jerseys and frame them and stick them up or whatnot?
No, I have up my attic. I've put a lot of stuff away for, you know, down the line to bring it out. I've got my 150 caps for whenever I get 150 caps at Ulster.
Yeah,
you get that. So I've got 150 caps. I've got my Rugby World Cup cap in my own house, because that was a big moment for me too, because I'd come back from an illness, and I'd come back in so sick in 2014 with a mini stroke, and I got back to play in the World Cup in 2015. So I kind of, at one stage, I thought I was retiring. I didn't think I was going to get back to play. So that was a special moment to get in the World Cup. So I've got my two caps for that. The rest of my stuff, like I've still got my Irish Schools cap, my Irish Sevens cap, which I know you're surprised I did play Sevens. You know, my first Irish cap, I actually still have at my mum's house out in the countryside. You know, keep it there because they were a massive part of my journey.
Yeah.
You know, my folks, my family. So they've got that at the moment. So I don't like to put up too much stuff in the house.
It's nice to keep it as well, like, and you're going to use it at some stage. Have it in boxes, and someday it might come out and you go, oh, show the old grandkids, or somebody go, do you know what, let's get their framed, or someone might go look and go find it, and gives you his Christmas present.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Chris, I just wanted to mention, you touched on your Sevens career. You were one of the first players in the Sevens men setup, weren't you, at the time you played in the World Cup?
Yeah, well, we qualified for the World Cup, so it wasn't played. But Sevens was always a bit like haphazard and was thrown together. And before I got my first run, first start for Ulster, they kind of just sort of threw guys on that sort of level who weren't going to get game time together and just let them all wing it, really. You know, we didn't know how to play Sevens at all, but it was a cracking team. Like, we had Keith Earls, Felix Jones, Ian Keatley, myself, James Coughlin, Darren Cave.
Colin McMahon.
That's a good team.
But there's guys there, like, you know, we were chatting before the show, and honestly, before the Sevens, I was always seen as number eight, and then I changed across the open side. And before the Sevens, I couldn't properly pass off my left hand. Defensively, it was terrifying as a forward, because you're so isolated at Sevens. You have to, you know, you've got 10 meters either side of you. You have to learn how to properly balance yourself and make those tackles. So for me, playing Sevens was amazing for my career development. So to see how the game, you know, is different level now, it's unreal. And we got to play in, you know, a few tournaments. I think it was Denmark, Poland, and Germany. And because of that, we had a couple of, you know, important wins against some good sides. And then it got us to the World Cup in Dubai that year, where I know the guys got the beat Australia. But my first cap for Ulster was that week, so I couldn't go. And they were staying in Atlantis. They were all sending me photographs of down the water parks and having this time. And go, oh, no, I got to play for Ulster, and my career went on. So I have no regrets. But it would have been lovely if maybe the timing was a week later, where I could have done the Sevens and then got my cap. But yeah, it was really, I loved my time in the Sevens, really did.
The majority of that team all went on to be incredible internationals. Mm. Like, so just show, and even nowadays with the Sevens team, there's fellas coming in like Hugh O'Keefe and Will Connor, Shane Daly, and they all go back and play for Ireland. So,
and Nick Timoney.
And Nick Timoney as well. So the Sevens is, there's something there.
There's going to be more coming through. It's something that we've looked at. Like, I mean, you see it over New Zealand, like as recently as someone like Caleb Clark, who came through. Like, the players that have come through, like, you know, go back to far to like the Dougie Howlett's, the Jonah Lomos, they all came through Sevens, and we've disregarded for so long. When he finally started to bring it back in. But as you said there, I mean, if it's going to completely transform your game, improve your passing, and improve where you're going to be in the defensive line, everything, it just makes you an all-round better player. Yeah. And especially if you're maybe not quite at the level to play international, okay, stick him in here for a year, let him get better at everything, and then all of a sudden he's going to go back out. Like, and then you go on and you have a successful career with your province and with your country. You know?
Exactly. I just got out of the Sevens program and they do see it as a developmental squad, even though we're at the top of the world. Like, we went to the Olympics, we're in the World Cup, in the World Series, but it's seen as a developmental squad, and it is working, the idea behind it. And all the other top countries in the world have Sevens programs, so it's great that ours is getting so good, and the women's is so good as well. So
it's the stepping stones, definitely. Yeah. I have a final question actually for you. Just with all the matches that you've played, your Sevens, your 15s, Ulster, who's the best player, standout person that you've played with alongside? Who's your favourite?
I mean, I'm sure a lot of players go to the same one, but for me, I do think Brian O'Driscoll. If I had to pick one person, I mean, you knew that no matter who you played against, if he was in your starting team, you knew you had a chance, because he could do things that people couldn't do. So yes, there's lots of other people I could say, but
no, just jump in there. Just like, people always say, I hate saying Brian O'Driscoll because it's the easy answer, but we always see how good he is on TV and matches, and we know he's one of the best centres, but what we don't see is behind the scenes. What's he like in training? What's he like in talk? Is he that good? Is he always like the best player in training? Is he always one of the guys that's the best guy to talk in the change rooms? Was he always that good?
No, I mean, look, I wouldn't say he was the best guy as a captain, as a talker. I don't think that, but that was needed from him, because it was how he just went about his business and led from the front. And you're talking about training, like Brian O'Driscoll, Darcy, like all that sort of generation, from my perspective anyway. Like, and then when Rory Best, like, we as an Ulster team, whenever I first started, we thought we might have been like training hard and the level we needed, but we weren't. We were behind the game, and that's like the likes of Brian was just different level, and what he demanded from everyone. And you see like the stories on the podcast come out before about how like Johnny Sexton's so fiery with Dreco and with Rob Carney, but that like they're so demanding of each other. And I remember just sitting there going, this is incredible. It's just getting, I'm not saying you should be fighting.
It brings you up though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It brings a stand up. But if you're saying about raw, out and out talent, someone who could change a game, you look, I mean, you just Google his highlights and you go, this is who, you know, there will be another Brian O'Driscoll, but I don't know when, because, you know, he
really leads by example in every aspect.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. It's a generational player, I think that's it. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, of course. So there were some great answers out of you, Chris. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed answering them.
No, it was good fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So now we'll be turning to social media, guys, and see what the social media thought of all the action and news this week.
Yep.
So first up, we have Cora Ní Gealgóir. Sorry if I pronounce it wrong. As per usual, Holly Davidson played an absolute blinder tonight in a rather error-laden game. Clear, concise and decisive. Hashtag Ospreys versus Munster. I thought Holly Davidson was an incredible ref.
Yeah. As I said, it's good to see more female referees come into the game. Like, and like she showed there, she was 100% there a merit, because she didn't make any decisions right. Like, she didn't get any decisions wrong.
Yeah,
I've been lucky that well. I've been reffed by her. She's very good. You know, always on point, and she's always talking to you as well, constantly in your ear. Like, and she was brilliant to watch.
Bernard Jackman here as well. Then also commenting on her, credit to tonight's ref in Swansea, Holly Davidson, has been excellent. I'm sure we will see a lot more in the @URC official. And, you know, that's great praise coming from Jackman there again. So I think
it was actually a little bit surreal to see a woman ref on it. It was, you know, especially when you know her as well. You can see the respect from the guys as well for their decisions too.
Yeah. There was lots of praise again on Twitter again this week for Jack Carty. I think we alluded to that earlier. He's probably unlucky to miss out. Is Jack Carty actually trolling Andy Farrell at this stage with that no look out the back pass? What a performance. A tweet there from Joe Caulfield. Like, I think, yeah, if you look at the tens that miss out, so obviously Ross Byrne missed out, Billy Burns missed out, Jack Carty missed out. He's probably the most unlucky out of the three of them, given the form he's in this season.
In the current form, yeah, you could arguably say, but under Johnny Sexton, he's the best 10 in Ireland at the moment, I would say, anyway. But look, there's just so many good guys out there. Harry Burns in and Ross is in, like things like that. So,
do you have him in there, would you?
Probably would. I mean, Jack Carty, if you look at the Ulster game, the game plan was obviously Stuart McCloskey go through him. And I think in the first one, he did go through him. But then every other time, like Jack Carty had a cracking game defensively, and he's just can manage a game really, really well. So I think he's a really tidy player, and I'm sure he is very, feeling very frustrated that didn't get the nod, you know.
Move on to this tweet from Aaron Smith. This is something I spotted myself over the weekend, and actually ended up putting a lovely graphic together on Rugby Joe's Instagram. You'll spot it. But basically, 10 years ago, Richie McCaw was talking about as well, it was when the All Blacks won their second World Cup, but their first professional World Cup with that crowd. And basically, before that, himself and Naomh Innes-Scullar were watching that, like sitting down drinking a beer, and he's tweeting that, like, imagine this is the World Cup before that, like, imagine us being in that, and then 4 years later they're in a final starting together. And like, if you go on to Instagram, you'll actually see a picture of the two lads they're taking a selfie in the changing room. The two guys sitting down, like, apparently they like played the whole way up together, they're best friends. But it's a cool kind of story, isn't it?
That is really cool. Yeah, I love that. Aaron Smith's an unbelievable player as well.
Yeah, really cool.
Another one, talking about the All Blacks. So we've another one here from Dennis Pasquale, and he said the brotherhood of rugby has always impressed me. Just before the Haka, USA honoured fallen All Blacks Sean Wainu, I hope I pronounced that right, who had died about a week ago in an accident. So touch of class by USA there for the All Blacks.
Yeah, that's Sean Wainu that died there last week. He was only 25. He played for the Chiefs and the Maori All Blacks. So nice presentation, similar to what they did with Anthony Foley a few years ago. Came out, laid his jersey down. I know there was a really sad video going around there during the week of him that went viral a few years ago, of him teaching his 8-month-old child how to do a haka. So this would have been January of last year, like when he died in a car crash. But I said, like, it's good to see that brotherhood in rugby, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great to see the respect. I love that about rugby, isn't it beautiful, Chris?
Yeah, of course. And I think, am I right in saying, I think the All Blacks as well, each player was given a choice to play. They didn't have
to. They could have taken it if they were, yeah.
So, look, I'm not, like, it's just why rugby's so good, right? The core values of it. Lovely to see, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to finish there in the social media section. Remember now to use the hashtag #HouseOfRugbyURC and we'll get all your social media content.
Well, that's it for this week's show.
Yeah, guys, that's all we've got time for. Thanks again to our sponsors, Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the four Irish provinces.
And of course, thanks very much, Chris, for joining us and being a great guest.
Thank you.
We'll be back in 2 weeks to discuss the Autumn Internationals, so I'll see you then.
Thanks, guys.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.